6 o'clock, it's our time. We go right over to the Better Health Radio Show in just a second. But I want to just mention to those who've been calling and asking about the No Name Game Show, including the gentleman just a minute ago, who actually started to quiz me. It will come back. I guarantee you it will. And as soon as we have that date for you, I will make sure that we announce it on the Sunday so you can join us, God's willing, on the Monday evening for it. All right, so please stand by. It will come back. Just give us a few more, days, and we'll make you happy. All right, minute after six now, we've got Dr. Dana Grandison standing by with her guest. So let's get on over to the Better Health Radio Show. Dr. Dana Grandison, she is your host this evening for the Better Health Radio Show, and she has her guest with her. So let me stop talking and wish her a very pleasant evening. Good evening to you, Doc.
Hello, good evening to you, Gregston, and to our wider listeners in Barbados this evening. I want to say thank you, Gregston, for having us back another week. And as promised, I told you we were going to have a very impactful 2023. And therefore, we decided to have our introductory dialogue with none other than Mr. Brian Payne. Brian Payne is currently acting in the capacity of Deputy Nutrition Officer with the National Nutrition Center within the Ministry of Health and Wellness. He has earned a Master's of Science degree in Nutrition, Physical Activity and Public Health from the University of Bristol and in Human Nutrition from McGill University. In 2015, he completed a multidisciplinary training program in global nutrition policy for sustainable development under the auspices of the Latin America Society of Nutrition. During this fellowship, he completed stints at the WHO Geneva and Nutrition International in Canada. On his return, he continued his work with the National Nutrition Center. As DNO, he's provided technical assistance to the dietary departments of government-run long-term care facilities. These include Her Majesty's Prison at Dodds, the Government Industrial School, and various district hospitals. He's currently a fellow with the Eastern Caribbean Health Research Outcomes Research Network of Yale University and sits in the capacity of Deputy Chairman for the National HIV/AIDS Commission. Good evening and welcome, Mr. Payne. How are you doing?
Hi, good evening. Good evening, all. Good evening to the listeners. Good evening to you, good doctor. Gregson, it's a pleasure to see you or hear you again.
Thank you, sir.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Now, I want to say to our listeners this evening, so I start the ball rolling correctly, because sometimes I often get so excited and carried away without giving those numbers. So the numbers for you to call into the studio would be 434-1790 if you want to call and speak to Mr. Payne directly, or you can call our WhatsApp at 266-4862. Again, that's 266-4862. You can send in those WhatsApp messages and Gregson will be sure to read those messages to us so that we can get your questions answered. Now, I wanted to start out by asking Mr. Payne straight out the gates, what is the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian? And then I think we can take the conversation from there, because I know a lot of persons are often quite confused. If there is a difference, why are you sending me to one versus the other? So I just wanted to get some clarification on that subject matter to start the ball rolling.
Sure. I think both nutritionists and dietitians, they fall under a very broad umbrella of nutrition professionals. Dietitian, they would be more specialized to work in a hospital or clinical setting. And in terms of managing things like renal diets or enteral feeding. So they have that specialization. Whereas a nutrition professional like myself, we would tend to work more in a public health capacity. Though some of us work within a clinical setting as well too. So like for me specifically, I do work with patients. However, my primary interest would be nutrition policy and policies related to anything public health.
Great. So you're more looking at the bigger picture and how it affects the community in which you live and service, correct?
Indeed, yes. And also, some dietitians may also have interest in public health policy as well too. So it really depends on the interest of the individual. And I'm sure you could draw a parallel to medical doctors who work in a wide cross section of fields.
Great, great. So can you tell me really what is nutrition? Because we, in medicine, I know this is something that a lot of us doctors, we hold a lot of lashes for, where we are happy to assist persons from a pharmacological standpoint, sometimes providing medication to help someone. But certainly, and I think all doctors agree that there is a role for healthy diet. Certainly, it is a modifiable risk factor because a lot of us, especially within the Barbadian context, I often say this, persons will have a half plate of starch. So that would be the rice, especially on a day like today, some rice, some pie, a little sweet potato pie, some macaroni salad, and they have chicken and fish. And then there's just that small little drizzle, you know, a little dollop of salad on the side. And I'm talking about the bush or the vegetables. So really, what is nutrition and why is it important?
I think I see Gregson over there smiling as well, too. And I think what you said really brought me back to a colleague of mine, and she referred to it as a conscience salad almost, you know, just eat it just because. I think the term nutrition, or to just to be more liberal, the term diet, it really speaks to the typical foods that we would consume on a daily basis. So let's say not that it's a Bajan diet per se, but the typical West Indian diet, which is a bit different from the North American diet, which is a little different from the Mediterranean diet. Right. So nutrition really speaks to the typical foods that persons may consume in particular regions. What I would also say here too is that they have this, over the last 20, 30 years, there's been a significant shift in the typical quote unquote Bajan diet. And our diet is now approaching a more North American diet. And the challenge there is that the typical North American diet is one which I just spoke about, high carbohydrate foods, high in fat, high in sodium, high in cholesterol, and in many instances, possibly high in alcohol as well, too.
Yes.
And just to bring home a bit, or to make it more holistic, there's this lack of physical activity as well, too.
Absolutely.
So all these things fall under the umbrella of quote-unquote nutrition.
And I'm glad that you brought that up because, you know, quite often we think when we eat, we should be eating for what tastes good to the palate versus what is good for the body in terms of reducing the possibility of developing diabetes or managing your diabetes and certainly decreasing cardiovascular risk profiles. So also, longevity, increasing longevity, given that Barbadians, we do have a good few centenarians. And certainly when you look at the diet that they probably would have had and the activities that they would have participated in back then versus what we eat now, certainly is completely different. So I wanted to ask, what really is malnutrition? Because sometimes we just toss that term around. But I wanted to understand, and I want our listeners to be able to understand what really is malnutrition, because certainly that plays a role as we continue this conversation.
I think what I would say before is that I think the challenge with us, not only Barbadians, but the challenge with people in general is that we tend to have this strange relationship with food where we tend to want to eat until we're full, or we eat what we see and we don't eat until we're satisfied. So we don't necessarily approach eating as we're eating for maintenance of good health. We approach eating because we love to eat or we like to eat. And that's a typical Bajan experience. The term malnutrition, it really speaks to bad nutrition. And it can be overnutrition or it can be undernutrition. Or it can be what we call micronutrient deficiency as well, too. So malnutrition, again, is a broad umbrella term which describes a number of food-related challenges. But I think when people hear malnutrition, they tend to think of the image from back in the 80s where we would see a child from Africa, you know, start with the distended abdomen and the flies. But malnutrition runs a gamut of conditions, you know. And a person can look obese or overweight, or a person can look underweight, and they can have several forms of malnutrition, especially things like micronutrient deficiency as well, too.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you spoke on micronutrient deficiency, because I am a very strong proponent of getting in that micronutrient content. Mm. And so I want to really take this opportunity for you to, as a nutritionist, because certainly as doctors, we are not the specialists and we have to give away to you in this realm. Really, what is a healthy diet and how should that plate look? And I want you to pay specific attention to how that healthy plate can look in the Barbadian context at an affordable price.
Definitely a very, very good question. And in terms of what a healthy plate would look like, because when people hear the term diet or people hear the term good eating, I think in many instances, people get a bit confused, you know, and they tend to struggle a bit. But from my experience, this whole idea of a healthy diet, quote unquote, it really speaks to eating a wide variety of foods. And that is the key thing in terms of using a wide variety of foods, where you eat from all the different food groups, whether it be fruits, vegetables, staples, and a small amount of fats and oils. You want to consume, make sure you consume your meats or your lean meats, your fish, poultry. So it really speaks to eating a wide variety of foods. Within the typical Bajan context, we tend to have it there, as you pointed out, loaded with staples or high carbohydrate foods. And then we have a large portion of meat, fish, or poultry. And in most instances, it's fried meat, fish, or poultry. And then we have a small portion of salad or vegetables, cooked or raw vegetables. But the key thing here, we have to look at it from a different perspective or a different paradigm, where we say the main thing on our plate should be vegetables, where possible, a small serving of the staples, and of course, a small serving of high quality protein. And by high quality protein, I basically mean lean meat, fish, or poultry, preferably not fried or pickled or brined in any way.
And can you give us an example of what a plate would look like?
Sure. I would probably say, if possible, half of the plate should be some kind of salad or garden salad or uncooked vegetable, or it could be cooked vegetables as well. It could be just to use the Bajan terminology, it could be like a pot spoon and a half of the staple. Preferably, the staple could be something like rice, could be potato, it could be gone provisions, etc. And again, it could be a portion of meat, fish, roughly between 4 to 6 ounces of meat, fish, or poultry, or just like the size of half of your extended palm. Right. So just to bring it home a bit, so the vegetables, if possible, should be two fists. Staples should be one. And the meat, fish, or poultry should be, you know, half of the extended hand.
So essentially the palm of the hand without the fingers.
Yes, correct.
And we're not using more than one fist. Because I know persons will say, well, if it's a starch, I can use a fistful of rice and a fistful of a pie. So if you're dealing with your starch, it's one fist, one period fist on your plate. For correct. That serving of starch. I see Gregson laughing. I'm not too sure why Gregson is here laughing.
I am sure.
Good. Excellent.
I'm listening. No. I'm listening to the description of how my plate should look. Carry on.
So I wanted to also ask you another question. In the Barbadian context, we are a port-loving society. Mm-hmm. We are, especially a day like yesterday, we would be a Pudna South community. We like a lot of salted foods, a lot of tinned foods as well. All mm-hmm. of these things contain lots of salt.
Right.
Really, what should we be aiming for when it comes to our salt intake? On a daily basis, how do you really go about that? And are there any foods that generally we tend to use on a daily basis that we should really be looking out for and saying you may need to cut back on this particular type of food?
In terms of the typical Barbadian diet, is one which, as you mentioned, is loaded with salt. And I think the key thing here, and sugar as well, but salt specifically. But the key thing here is that we want to limit the intake of added salt to the food. Another input, whether it be from the pickle from the pudding and sauce, or whether it be from the things like the salted meat or the salted fish or the canned products, we want to limit the amount of added salt we consume, and that's very important. I know the typical thing people say when they have salted fish or salted meat, they would say, oh, well, I have boiled out all the salt or all the salt from the salt meat or all the salted fish. But the key thing here is that regardless of how long you would boil salt meat or salt fish, The sodium level does not change. Even though it doesn't have the salty taste, the sodium level definitely remains constant. And that is the challenge there. Again, the typical canned foods are very high in sodium, especially the canned meats. They're very high in sodium. So therefore, I encourage persons to limit the intake of the canned foods and the canned meats, also the processed meats, hot dogs, hamburgers, the lunch meat, the salami and the deli meats. Those things are often also very high in sodium as well too. And not only sodium, but they're also very high in added fat and of course cholesterol as well too. Because when you think about it, the hot dogs, the hamburgers, the lunch meat and those things, they're made from the cuts of meat, which you wouldn't see as, you know, like chicken breasts or chops, etc. You know, so therefore they're made from the meats with the fatty, with high fat.
Right. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because apart from our tin foods, we also have things like our Bajan seasonings, which are heavily salted, and the added OXO cubes and Maggi cubes, etc. So we are getting in lots of salt. And working now with Mr. Payne, he's the nutritionist and the physician, there is a role that salt certainly plays, especially in Blacks, as it relates to driving hypertension. So a person whose diet is certainly very high in salt essentially provides the perfect environment to have poorly controlled elevated blood pressures. So we want to really encourage our listeners out there. I know we tend to like salty foods. Are there any suggestions in terms of other foods we can use? I know I generally would recommend herbs, but maybe you may have some suggestions in terms of some of those things that we can use to give the flavor, because I know Barbadians love flavor, and I being a foodie, I like flavor too, but to try to minimize the amount of salt in the diet.
Of course, I think most Barbadians, as you mentioned earlier, they would consume way over the 1500 milligrams, which is recommended for most adults. They consume way over that. And the challenge is that the typical Barbadian would eat things which they may not assume is salt, because we tend to assume that salt is salt that we would sprinkle onto food or onto whatever the case may be. How Barbadians cook, the key thing what we do is that we tend to put the herbs and the spices into the pot almost first. So therefore, by the time the food has finished cooked, a lot of the flavor has been almost boiled out of it. So I think a key thing, when I worked in the clinic more, I would encourage persons to add their herbs and spices later in the cooking process, as opposed to upfront, you know, where you tend to lose all the flavors in that way. I often tell people to, if possible, make your own seasoning and condiments where possible. Because you must understand that the typical manufacturer, They don't necessarily manufacture things like seasonings and the bouillon cubes for a hypertensive person or person with cardiovascular issues, you know. Right. So if you can, make your own seasonings where possible. And again, the key thing here, if you're accustomed to using one bouillon cube, you know, why not cut down to half or a quarter? So the key thing is that you need to use less. And it's almost a case where a person should try to retrain their taste buds, you know, because if persons who are on a low sodium diet or a low salt diet, and they'll happen to eat out, for instance, or they eat by a friend or a family friend, you know, they'll actually pick up or actually taste the amount of sodium that they would get from having a meal outside of the household. But the key thing here is try to prepare as many meals at home as possible, and avoid the fast foods as well too. You know, that's definitely very important.
All right, Brian, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Dr. Grandison, there's a caller on the line. He's on a cell phone, he's informed me, so I want to get him as quickly as possible. Is that fine with you?
Great.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right. Caller, you still with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. Good evening, Gregston. God bless.
Good evening to you. Brian is with you. Go ahead, please.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call, and sorry that I'm on cell phone. Next time, we'll make it a little easier so that they can talk more and I can listen more, and we could all get less bad nutrition in and more good food. Me being a foodie myself, Dr. Grandison, good evening. God bless you. And yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Trishis. I have a quick question here. How can we, because I always wondered about this, and me being so into food and into nutrition and into being a wanting to enter into the field and feeling so good about when you actually eat a healthy meal or a healthy diet, and I do exercise as well. I try to train at least 2 hours a day, getting my high intensity interval training, as well as my routine based on I have an app on my phone that helps me. What can you do to get that based on the 2,000 calorie diet rule by the Food and Drug Administration in terms of personalize it for your own weight? Because for years I was eating and think I was getting in the right amounts of, yes, the trace minerals, the boron and so on, the molybdenum, the chromium, yes, we have the carbohydrates, the maltodextrin, the sucrose, the fructose, the fat, fatty acids, omega-3 and so on, and the protein as well, the tryptophan, all these kind of things. But what can we do as the average man in the public? Some of us are more enthusiastic about our health than others, but what can we do? What can all of us do so that based on that 2,000 calorie diet, based on the 120 pound, instead of me like being more close to 180, how can we tailor that to ourselves? How can we cater for the advancement of our diet and the healthiness based upon that so that we are able then to carve out a proper diet for ourselves based on nutritional facts, but already given for that particular type of person, 120 pounds based on the 2,000 calories diet? Because like for me, sometimes I eat 3,000 calories.
Mr. Payne?
Yeah, of course. I think I got most of what you said. And I think the key thing here, that counting calories can be very frustrating for the average person. So, I mean, I would often encourage persons that, as opposed to trying to count calories. And again, that's why one of the key things I said initially here is that we want to have, you know, food-based. So don't get into the habit of trying to micromanage your micronutrient intake or your micronutrient intake, especially in your calories. The key thing here is to eat whole foods as often as possible. And by eating a wide variety of foods, you're going to get in all the macros and all the micronutrients which you need. And that's the important thing. As you mentioned, the typical adult male should probably consume roughly about 2,000 calories per day, the female 1,800 calories per day. But again, it doesn't make sense focusing on that unless you get some kind of specialized attention, because again, it would leave you very frustrated. So the key thing here, I often tell people, especially if you're concerned about your calorie intake, the key thing to do is, one, eat less, use smaller portion sizes of especially the high calorie foods, like the carbohydrates or the staples, and use less of the animal-based foods, whether it be things like the meats, the fish, the poultry, etc. And that's the key thing. Limit your intake of things like fats and oils. Very, 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 very important. And I think the caller mentioned something which is very good, is that even though he's not the typical Barbadian, he said he gets in roughly about 2 hours of physical activity a day. So by bumping up your physical activity intake, definitely that makes a huge difference in terms of regulating your calorie intake. And
more than usual. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So the key thing here, I tell people, do not focus on trying to get in all the different micronutrients individually. Correct. Eating a balanced diet is very important. And that means eating a wide variety of foods. But if a person has like a specific micronutrient challenge, let's say they will go to the good doctor and they had some blood work done, and they have iron deficiency anemia, or they have some kind of other issue, and then something can be tailored for them, whether they have a supplement or whether we go for a food based approach, and that's the important thing. But counting calories can leave the average person very frustrated.
All right, now I've got your attention. Can I add something else there, Doc?
Absolutely.
Yeah, this person is wondering, they say, hi, can the dietitian give us measurements? For example, 1 cup of mixed steamed vegetables or 1/2 cup rather than a fist. So they want measurements. I think people would be able to actually measure it correctly, so they say. So can you give any measurements, Brian?
Sure. In terms of vegetables specifically, I think, again, the key thing here is there's a dose response effect. And what that means is that it means the more fruits and vegetables you consume, the more health benefit you're going to derive. Of course, if a person may be diabetic, for instance, you would definitely want to limit their intake of especially fruits. But again, there's a dose response effect in terms of the more fruits and vegetables a person consumes, the more health benefit they can derive. And physical activity is a similar thing, dose response. The more activity you do, the more health benefit you can derive. In terms of vegetables, now I think the ideal amount of vegetables would be 1 cup to 1.5 cups. But again, if you can consume more, of course, based on your pocket or based on your relationship with your if you're a farmer or your or the person you would buy stuff from the market, if you can consume more, that's even better as well too. But the typical Barbadian, I'm sorry if I'm making this assumption, but they generally don't measure things by cups. The typical Barbadian, especially when they work in the clinic more. So that's why I try to, you know, to give a good measure in terms of something that everyone can relate to. Again, pot spoons as well too. Because I mean, I've had cases where I've had patients in a clinical setting, and they said, I've cut down on the amount of food I'm consuming. I'm now consuming 4 pot spoons of rice. I'm like, definitely that's too many pot spoons. You want to get closer to 1 to 1.5, you know. So, but in terms of vegetables specifically, 1 cup to 1.5 cups, 2 cups again. But the more you consume, the more health benefit you're going to get, especially if you're going to consume the dark green leafy vegetables, which are high in micronutrients, and again, they're definitely very low in calories.
All right. I beg your pardon, Doc.
I was about to say, I think Mr. Payne is like he's peeping at in the questions in my head, because that's exactly where we were going to go next. But Gregson, do you have any more?
Somebody wants to get in your personal business, Doc, and Mr. Dietitian. They're asking, they say radio husband, anyhow, do these doctors and dietitians really eat the same way they advise us?
Well, I will be the first to tell you, I certainly do. Saturday mornings, 6-7 o'clock, I am in Cheapside Market getting my vegetables for the week. And I try to have vegetables with every single meal. Certainly when it comes to oils, I can tell you the only oil I consume is extra virgin olive oil, simply because I want to ensure that my good cholesterol is up and my bad cholesterol stays down. I don't think it makes any sense advocating for good healthy diets and eating poorly. So I would be the first to say, yes, I walk and talk in the same direction.
Brian?
Yeah, most definitely. I think I try to live a healthy lifestyle. And again, it's not only about eating healthy, and by healthy, basically eating a wide variety of foods. Again, I also try to be very physically active as well too. And again, that is important. And I think for me personally, and the good doctor can probably say the same thing. You know what I mean? When you would see patients, you know, it's challenging for me to advise them and me not absolutely necessarily living the life that I would advise them to live. However, I would also say too, I'm not saying that I wouldn't have maybe some kind of snack or some kind of treat. But again, the idea is that the treat or the snack is not the norm. It's something correct that I would use on occasion.
Correct.
All right. This person is asking for some advice, or rather some clarification. They're wondering the term healthy food. How possible is that, as most of the foods are laced with chemicals or have been preserved?
I actually like that question, Mr. Payne, because I know quite often we try to get our healthy foods from the supermarket in a package on the shelf with an expiration date. And I want to really hear your take on that.
Again, it's an interesting question as well too. But I must say first things first. The average Bajan, they do not consume adequate amounts of fruits and vegetables. When people talk about preservative and pesticides and chemicals, etc., they tend to point at the vegetables and the fruits. So one, it really comes down to your relationship with your, whether you grow your own foods or whether you have a person in the market, in Cheapside Market, whichever market you go to, who you can trust to give you high quality fruits and vegetables. So one, you're going to start at home, or you're going to have a good relationship with your farmer or your market person to make sure that they give you high quality fruits and vegetables. And that's the first important thing. If you're that concerned about things like pesticides and chemicals on fruits and vegetables, there are things you could do by washing them thoroughly, scrubbing them, removing the skin, you know, using things like baking soda and water to help get off the potential pesticide residues. But the major issue for the typical Barbadian is not that they're ingesting chemicals from fruits and vegetables. is that they're not consuming adequate amounts. So the typical Barbadian consumes roughly 1.5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day, and we should be consuming at least 5 or more servings of fruits and vegetables. So that deficit is what I would be concerned about, as opposed to be getting bogged down in terms of, you know, the potential for pesticides. Because I think what I would say is that I think most farmers here are quite responsible, you know. So my thing is that we don't consume enough.
Okay, Doc, go ahead, please. Go ahead, please.
Great. So I am happy that you spoke about the 1 to 2 cups of vegetables. Two questions I have. I'll ask about the general state of vegetables first, and then I'm going to go into a bit of starchy veg. Growing up, we have seen, well, I have seen a lot of vegetables cook until they don't look the same color they originally were. They look dead. They're limp. I know that some persons like to boil vegetables, and certainly we don't really recommend that, especially because what you end up most likely having would be just a source of fiber and really removing all of the good nutritional content from the vegetables. Are there any recommendations that you have really for how to prepare some of these vegetables, maintaining those nice robust flavors that you can get from the vegetables, and also ensuring that we are actually keeping the micronutrient content, which is the whole reason behind using them?
I think, unfortunately, the challenge for us in Barbados, I remember my grandmother growing up, she would boil the beans, the carrots, until they were
fluffy.
The color was totally different, so they didn't have the vibrant color. So, unfortunately, from a Barbadian perspective, those things have changed a bit. We overcook vegetables. And when we overcook vegetables, we tend to denature the antioxidants, you know, and that's important. So the least cooking you can do to vegetables, the healthier they would be. But Barbadians still complain, oh, the broccoli is too crunchy, the carrots are too crunchy. You know, so we haven't acquired the taste for fresh vegetables or vegetables which are minimally processed or minimally cooked. So it's going to take almost like a reframing of the Barbadian mind, you know, because I think we traditionally have overcooked vegetables. And when we have vegetables which are cooked lightly or blanched, we complain that these things are too hard, you know. But
I'll say to you, Brian, quite interestingly, only this year I came across raw Christophine. Always growing up, I've always consumed my Christophine slightly cooked with a bit of crunch in it. But this year was the first time that I actually had raw Christophine treated just as you would treat cucumber. And I would tell you, it was a very pleasant surprise. So I want to let our listeners out there know that certainly having the vegetables raw or very lightly cooked, even slightly roasted in the oven, you still maintain all of those really good flavors, and you maintain the micronutrient content that you want. You spoke about the consumption of starches, and you said you want to make sure that persons are using those green leafy vegetables. And quite often in the Caribbean context, when we put vegetables on the plate, we may have our starch portion, and I'm going back to the starch portion, and I'm singing for the persons in the back of the choir. We have that starch portion, but then we use as a vegetable option the carrots and the squash, which we generally know to be our starchy veg. Tell us about that, and how do we work around, and what are the options that we have? And you started to talk about it, which would be the dark green leafies, but just explain that to us in a bit more clarification.
Well, the dark green leafy and yellow vegetables, whether it be things like the lettuce, the broccoli, the kale, the peppers, and those things which would be high in micronutrients, but they will contain limited calories compared to the carrots, the squash, things like plantain, for instance, as well too. So they will contain more calories compared to the dark green leafy and yellow things. So for the average person, the key thing here is that we must appreciate or understand that they're going to add a significant amount of calories to a person's diet. So if you're going to have like a rice or a pasta dish, no, you need to be cognizant that, okay, but I'm going to have maybe some carrots with, you know, with with this rice or with this pasta. So therefore, maybe I want to use a little less of the starchy component of the meal to compensate for the calories from the starchy vegetables. Mm-hmm. So that's important.
So when we speak about, you spoke about fats, mm-hmm. and I think that's really, really important because we tend to use lots of butters, lots of canola and corn oil, lots of vegetable oil. What are your recommendations on the types of fats that we should be using on a daily basis? For breakfast, persons can find themselves scrambling their eggs with some butter or margarine. And then certainly we have a lot of fried foods here in Barbados that persons tend to consume. And even in the stews, you want to start it off with some oil and burn the sugar. I am a foodie, and there's lots of oil in your food. So how do we get around that while ensuring that the content that we're putting in is good for this heart that we have and that we need to keep healthy?
I would start by saying I hope that Bajans are no longer using the large dub of the bright orange margarine. I hope that is a thing of the past.
The clover leaf.
Not the clover leaf, the other one. but because of the sodium content in addition to the fat as well too. But in terms of fats now, maybe we can divide fats into two very broad categories. Plant-based fats and animal-based fats. The animal-based fats are generally higher in saturated fats, which are definitely very bad for your cardiovascular health. And the vegetable-based fats are high in polyunsaturated fats, whether poly or monounsaturated fats, which are heart healthy. However, when we consume too many fat in general, is very bad for our cardiovascular health. So even though the unsaturated fats are generally good for you, overconsumption is very bad for your cardiovascular, for your health in general, but also your cardiovascular health. So the key thing here is that you want to use less fat. In terms of the animal-based fats, what we can do to get rid of the additional fat is to trim the visible fat from the meats, especially the red meats, the beef, the pork, the lamb. So trimming the excess visible fat makes a huge difference, and removing the skin from the meat prior to cooking makes a huge difference in terms of reducing the fat content. And that, I think that's important.
Gregson, I think we have a caller.
Yeah, and he's on his cell phone as well too. Good evening, Mr. Hope.
No, I want to get back to the diet again, but here's how I'm going to deal with it. Now, the time that I was asking about the proteinogenic amino acids, I don't remember if it was you that brought in the 8 essential amino acids. They're really going into 9 now because histidine has been added. But this is what I want to know. What would you say, Andy, let's deal with those 9 essential amino acids, which contain the muscle-building amino acids like valine, leucine, and isoleucine. And then let's look at threonine. Let's look at lysine, which is so very important to the body. Now, what I would want to know is, saying that they say first that you need to get those complete proteins to minimize the level of disease and destruction to the body, I would like to know about which are the best food crops that you would get your muscle building, what they call the branch chain amino acids from, which are essential because the body don't manufacture them, and seeing that includes lysine, and lysine is also very important for vision, along with the vitamin A. I want to know if you can tell the people, well, look, in your diet, here is where you can get the best lysine and this content from. Here is where you can get the best branched chain amino acids for muscle building. Here is where you can get what the other things. Now, what I'm saying is that I understand what you are saying, but the thing is that, but me, I'm not rich, I'm a poor guy. And therefore, I have to live within my means, even though I might settle for a lower income house, so I can buy the kind of nutrition that I want. All people are not like that. So still within the reach of whatever people are doing, I would like you to advise them in terms of, if you're using pork lard then, well, you must only use 1/4 ounce of pork lard or 1/8 ounce or whatever, and that would still carry you out to some means until you can do better. If you're using canned, well, I can't use canned situations because they make me sick. But for other people who can, what can they do? How can they present these things. The other thing is with fresh vegetables and fruits. We don't get fresh vegetables and fruits like the older people do, where they would get up in the morning and go under the tree and watch for the fruits that drop. Don't use them, those are fresh. But when you pick fruits and you keep them and then go outside, or look at the shelf life. So it's talking about fresh fruits and vegetables, a bare job. But you still have to buy them. You have to
tell
them when you're going to get fruits and vegetables, how much content you need to use and what you're getting. The other thing is that with the vegetables, we know that you get the glutamine and the vitamin A in spinach. But when you put that in a blender and you blend it and it gets hot, it destroys the glutamine. When you use vitamin C and you heat it up, it is destroyed. So when you even have these fruits and vegetables and you cook them, you ain't getting the vitamin C.
All right, Mr. Ho, just pause a moment so we can get a response from the expert here, please.
Yeah, great. Doc, I'm gonna jump in here first, and if I neglect to answer some of the questions he asked, please remind me, because he said a number of things there. I think I'll start with the first things he would have mentioned in terms of this idea of the amino acid profile of certain foods, whether they're essential or non-essential amino acids, and the key thing here. No, just to give the macro picture for the listeners, the key thing here as in terms of getting in all the required amino acids, because all of them are essential, right? The key thing here of getting in all the amino acids you require is having a balanced diet or eating a wide variety of foods. I think when people talk about protein specifically, especially amino acids and this idea of essential amino acids, they tend to have this focus on animal foods or meats or fish or poultry, because it's a concentrated source of protein. And also micronutrients, especially things like iron and, iron and magnesium and zinc, et cetera. But again, you don't necessarily have to be omnivorous to get all the required amino acids. You can get it from whether it be things like peas, beans, nuts, legumes, protein alternatives. You can get a complete amino acid profile, whether you're omnivorous or whether you live a vegetarian lifestyle. But the key thing here, it comes down to eating a wide variety of foods. And that's the important thing, because different foods have different micro macronutrient profiles. So by eating a wide variety, that makes a huge difference. I think that would have been the first.
Mr. Payne, if we could stick a pin there. And sure. The easiest way to do that is to ensure that your plate is full of lots of colors. Yeah?
Exactly. Correct. Yeah.
Good. Okay. Correct. Go ahead.
And that's the key thing. I think another question the caller would have said was this idea of
what foods to use. If we can just start off with the pork lard and the canned foods for now, and I want you to specifically address that because it's a bit concerning for me.
I hope that people aren't using pork lard these days. Of course, pork lard is a fat which should be definitely high in saturated fats, also high in cholesterol. And again, there's several alternatives, whether it be some kind of vegetable-based oil or whether it be some kind of extra virgin olive oil or virgin olive oil, coconut oil as well, too. But any vegetable oil would be an excellent alternative compared to, the animal-based fats especially. I don't think people use pork lard now. So I think that's important. In terms of the canned foods specifically, I think, as we can imagine, canned foods, especially canned meats, the corned beef, the lunch meat, the hot dogs and the sausages and the hamburgers, even though they're processed, even though they're frozen, but they're still processed meats. Again, the challenge of these processed meats is that they may contain, lots of fat, lots of sodium, lots of cholesterol, and they also would have preservatives. So the key thing for persons, I would say, the key thing is to limit your intake of the canned meats, especially. Things like the sardine and the tuna and the salmon are definitely a better alternative compared to the canned meats, again, because they will contain significantly less fat, for sure. The sardine, the mackerel, the salmon, they're going to contain the omega-3 fats, which are good for the heart and the cardiovascular system as well. So I'm not telling people to abstain from canned foods, but the key thing is to limit the canned meats, especially because of their sodium and their fat content and their cholesterol content. And the canned fish are definitely a better option. And preferably you want to have the canned fish in water as opposed to oil or brine, you know. I think that's important as well too. And I think the last thing the caller would have said was he was concerned about, he said there's no such thing as fresh fruits. I think a couple of days ago I was driving and I saw a dunk, and I stopped and I picked some dunks.
All right.
So, that's fresh. I'm sure you went into the market over the weekend, and your vegetables and your produce was fresh as well too.
Quite fresh.
So the key thing here is that it's not that canned vegetables and frozen vegetables are bad, because again they're going to contain significant amount of micronutrients, and we must appreciate that we can't always get the vegetables and fruits we want fresh. So the key thing here is that even though you may sacrifice in terms of some of the canned stuff may contain a bit of sugar, a bit of sodium, but again, you will do yourself more harm by not eating them, unless you have like a specific allergy to, let's say, to a chemical used in the canning process or
nitrates or something like that.
Yeah. And in that case, you want to use the frozen and the fresh, or even the dried fruits and vegetables are also a good alternative as well too.
All right. And so I think that what helps with driving some of that cost down is to look for the fruits and vegetables that are in season. Don't go looking for those strawberries and blueberries. Yes, they have great antioxidants, absolutely, but certainly they come with an increased price tag. Gregson, you have another caller?
Yeah, caller, you're still with us?
Good afternoon.
Yes, 1 second for me, please, before I forget, because the doc and...
I don't want you to forget, because... this is very important.
No, not you. I got you covered. I have you covered, is the comment that somebody was saying to our professionals here. They were asking, they don't think it's possible they can wash off, according to them, wash off chemicals from fruits and vegetables. That's what they're saying. That's number one. And they're also saying, well, you should also tell people to keep away from cold drinks and ice. Okay? Huh. And there was one in relation...
Gregson, I just want to pause a bit to respond to that. Because yes, prior to me starting my career in medicine, I did quite a stint in the space of toxicology. So when we deal with pesticides, yes, we spray pesticides. They are placed on the plants to be able to eradicate certain pests that we have. And certainly with those chemicals, they have a lifespan. They have what we call a half-life in terms of where they are very effective in terms of killing the organisms that they're targeting. And then when it will possibly become safe and less effective if consumed by the person at the very end, which would be the human. We don't want farmers, and I don't think that any ethical or moral farmer would spray products today and sell them this evening or tomorrow, because they have certain, especially within the Barbadian context, where persons love for things to become, you know, very robust and give you a good crop, a nice looking watermelon or good looking okras, would want to spray something very quickly and then sell it to you. So yes, we do have pesticides, and pesticides are used to try to mitigate the ruining of crops by some of the pests that we can have in our environments. But yes, in addition to that, there's the time that is allowed to pass so that these crops become safe again. And then certainly the washing and neutralization. There's a reason why, for instance, we recommend bicarbonate of soda, simply because it acts to neutralize some of these organophosphates that can be used. I do agree in terms of using cold water. Some persons can cause a bit of decreased digestion, that is known. But we just want persons to use water, period. I think that's what's very important, the use of water on a whole. Mr. Payne, any takes on that?
I think you summed up things nicely, and you know what I mean, I think there's nothing, especially in terms of the toxicology component of it, I think you summed up things really nicely. For me, in terms of persons using cold water or using ice, I personally have no issue with that. My issue would be if persons are chewing lots of ice. It can, of course, ice is a crystal, enamel is a crystal, it can also affect your teeth. But persons having cold drinks and are using ice water, I think there's an old wives' tale where people say ice water make you fat and that kind of thing. But water doesn't contain any calories, therefore it cannot make a person fat. It's the other things that you'll be consuming. So cold water and ice, I have no issue with persons consuming stuff like that.
All right, caller, you still with us?
Good afternoon.
Yes, go right ahead, please. I'll do the others afterwards.
My battery will go down.
Oh dear, I'm so sorry about that. Yeah, I had you holding for a little while, so go ahead, please.
Yes. Now, what I want to say in Barbados, right? Y'all are talking about people with weight or What? Tell me what you're really talking about.
We're talking about good nutritional practices. This is for the person who is the appropriate weight. We're talking about, for this is information for the person who may be overweight or obese, who wants to get back into a good healthy weight range, or even that person who is underweight and they need to be of adequate weight for healthy nutrition.
Okay, let me say something. My name is Victor Anthony Pengmanyang, Barbados senior athlete. Okay? You're familiar with that name?
Yes, I've heard that name before, sir.
You're familiar with it?
I am familiar.
Good. What I am saying to you, in Barbados, what we do, we consume a bundle of food. We deplete sort of like Mount Everest. We mostly talk about in Barbados, is food, you eat enough salt, we are cooked today. I don't hear nobody pushing physical fitness as how they push food and think about this place. So what I'm saying to you, you can tell people to do all these kind of things. You have to have a mind of your own. I am 85 years old, and there is no guy around that could come right now and outdo me in anything that is physically white. Because I understand the anatomy. Okay, because everybody is different. People believe that because they see somebody in a gym and they're doing this particular exercise or they're eating this particular food that is conducive to them, but everybody is differently. I can eat anything because my metabolism is very active, and it means that I put in calories, X amount of calories, but I burn them.
And I agree with you, but we have to make sure and address all of the risk factors that can possibly lead to various pathologies. And certainly, yes, we've started off in nutrition, but this is still very much very early in the year. And I can tell you, based upon what Keo, Kia, and myself have planned for even this quarter, this quarter, we will be addressing physical activity. So fear not, it is coming.
You, not crossing you. I can tell you, we've got a lot of people that is not physically fit in Barbados. Barbados got the highest unfit people apart in the world. I compete in Utah at the World Senior Games, and there is nobody in Utah who talk about being old or anything like that. They don't even mention the word old, because you got people out there who is 95 and 104 who are putting blocks and running out of blocks and doing all types of exercises down there. You see guys at 80 and 90 doing pole vault. Remember this? When a guy is 80 or 90, you know, he's there. I'm waiting here for the governor or the president to come and sip a drink with me and tell them about the hard cans, the cat. You don't hear the time. Well, I'm still competing and doing so on. So, because there's a mentality that we have in the Caribbean. What we like to have a big belly in front of some rabbit and tell you, oh man, this is good living. And somebody would say, go and sit down in the garden there and sit down on the stool and do a little digging up of the plants and you feel hard at that. That is not exercise. What people need in Barbados, and I can keep stressing it, whether they like it or not, and Dr. Fraser and myself, but I don't hear him now, but I'm going to keep pushing. Get out there and exercise. That is what you want. Because all the money we will earn in Barbados, and you got unhealthy people, you're doing nothing. It's as simple as that. You watch a lot of people with their pretty cars, the big Suzuki's, the big pretty house. And when they get out of the car or the big pretty house, it left a lot to be there. You know that the house and the car look bad in there? Because the only those things called the buy them, but with the health and the thing the Almighty gave you, you back, you give it to you. So you do it, you treat it as a, and then you run to the doctor, because my daughter's a doctor. Then you run to the doctor and say, doc, my back hurts in me. And the first thing, doctor, well, look at this thing you got in front of you, you're pregnant with fat.
All right, sir. Thank you, Kenny.
And you're absolutely true. You're absolutely true. But I want to reassure you that we have not forgotten exercise. Certainly, there's a significant role that exercise plays as especially as you age, in terms of loading those bones, ensuring that you remain structurally sound.
And I'm going to give you the last part. Now, here, a lot of people who come out there and talk about health and all this kind of thing, it also left a lot to desire. Because when people look at the individual who is talking about health, and that person can't turn a body belly fat, they say, how do you come and tell me what is health? Because people follow what you look like. You see? So the first thing, we got to motivate people by looking, not only talking it,
agreed,
but looking. Okay?
All right, sir. Thank you kindly. You have a wonderful evening. Thanks for your contribution. I know we're getting slim on time, Doc. I just want to read these comments here quickly. Brian, sure. Our expert, was talking about sardines a while ago. This person says, I love sardines. It is said that they're good for you. I think Brian said that as well. But I find the one in the water is too salty. Now, I think you said the one in the water is the good one. Not true?
Yeah, because again, if you compare the water, based on the amount of fat, the one in the water is definitely a better choice.
Right.
Because you wouldn't get as much calories from the fat.
Okay. And they were asking, I guess we can do it on another show, where we refer to the muscle building part of your diet. That person wanted to talk about that. And what does this one say? I like to read them first before I read them on the air, just to avoid trouble. Haven't read this one yet, but it looks pretty decent. Thanks for an interesting program. I was taking over 50 high potency multivitamins. I believe I needed the complex of B vitamins. And while I felt more energized, over time I realized I wasn't sleeping well. And I also seemed to urinate more frequently at night. My question, can some multivitamins cause negative health outcomes, including allergic reactions? And if so, what guidance would you give for choosing multivitamins? If you care to respond quickly, or no, it's up to you.
Yeah, I can just make a couple quick comments. In terms of multivitamins, you must understand that vitamins are supplements. Mm-hmm. And it's just supplement what you're not getting in your diet. What it would say is that the vitamins or minerals in food are more biologically available than the vitamins you would get in a pill or a liquid. You should only, even though the marketing for vitamins is great and people think that they need to take a vitamin every single day, but that is not the case. If you have like a medical diagnosis, like a deficiency, sure, but you can get the vast majority of your vitamins or minerals from food. What we find is that when people take these high dose or these mega dose supplements, especially water soluble vitamins, the vitamin C's, they tend to be passed out in the urine. You know, so in essence, the body can only assimilate a certain amount of a particular vitamin or mineral, and a lot of it tends to pass out. And what we also find too is that people who consume these high potency supplements in excess, they can actually develop toxicity from taking in these vitamins too often.
All right, Doc, all up to you. We're going to wrap it up because we're out of time, so we'll leave these other comments for another time. So, Dr. Granison, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Payne. I want to say thank you very much for coming. When we first corresponded, I told you we were going to have to do it in two parts because I knew that this discussion certainly was going to be a very robust discussion. And I know you also have lots of stuff to talk about as well in terms of the school nutrition policy at a later date and speaking about obesity as it relates to children, because we do have some challenges here in Barbados, and certainly to continue to answer some of these questions, because you see the questions are coming in quite quickly. So I want to say thank you very, very much for taking this Sunday evening out. I know a lot of our listeners are very grateful for you to come out and actually educate them, especially on something that we sometimes give information but not very practical information. And this year we started off trying to give our listeners SMART goals. And I think you really brought it down, really pinpointing that spoonful, that cup to cup and a half, so that persons know exactly when not only they go in the kitchen, but when they go to shop, what they really should be doing going forward. And I just want to remind our listener that in a few weeks' time, we will be tackling exercise. So fear not. Stay tuned. But thank you very, very much, Mr. Payne, for coming out this evening.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you. And Gregson, I'm going to turn over to you, and I want to say good evening to all of our listeners across Barbados.
Yeah, we were still having one or two calls while we were wrapping up there, but as the doc said, we will continue this discussion with Brian Payne at another time because we're out of time. He very well knows that he will have to make another return. So thank you, Mr. Payne. That's Brian Payne, our resident expert this evening, and of course, your host for the evening, Dr. Adana Grandison. And as I usually ask you, Doc, is it you next week, or is it you don't know, or is it Kia?
It's not me next week.
Okay.
It's somebody. I think it's either Kia. I think it's Kia, though.
All
but
right.
I'll just confirm with you. But we do have a lot more interesting topics as the month goes on. So stay tuned. Stay tuned. We're not finished yet. We're not even close to finish. So stay tuned.
All right. Wonderful. Doesn't matter who it is. Always an exciting program right here for the Better Health Radio Show. Again, thanks, Doc. Thanks, Mr. Payne. And have yourselves a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
All right.